This is John Nance from Redwood Advisors, and we are really lucky to have Brian Tachman of Casita with us today. Brian's an executive at Casita, has been an executive there for a few years. Casita is a company based in Austin that's working on modular homes. It's an extremely interesting, dynamic, innovative company that's trying to do something really cool. So given that we're doing a report on the Austin innovation ecosystem, I think it's hard. It would be hard to find someone better placed to talk about Austin's ability to foster innovation than Brian. So Brian, thank you for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So before we dig into the questions, would you mind just telling us a little bit about yourself, your role at Casita, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Brian Tachman. I am the Chief Operating Officer of Casita. I've been with Casita about since its inception. I came in originally to evaluate it for investment as part of my seed investing. And as I started to do diligence in the company and learn more about the market and the opportunity there, it really just caught my interest. One of the things we had saw early on was this McKinsey report around inefficiencies in markets and productivity in industries. And what we saw was that, the kind of global industries grow in terms of productivity or efficiency between 2 and 3% per year. Manufacturing in particular grows about 3.5% in terms of efficiency. They get better at building what they do. It takes, they can build 3.5% more widgets or product per year with the same resources they did last year, every single year. Construction has grown about 1.1% per year over the last 25 years. So that delta in a $13 trillion industry of, that 2.5% every single year compound interest gives you a deficit of trillions of dollars. And it just, that is a really good, kind of signal of what kind of opportunity lies in a market. And I generally, in my background, I'll give you a little bit more about it, but one of my previous roles before doing venture investing was private equity. And what I always found most interesting was the unsexy industries. All the smart minds, all the really competitive type A people always want to go into the high growth, super sexy businesses. And that usually attracts a lot of talent and drives a lot of innovation. Consumer products gets that a lot of new tech industries do. Housing construction just does not get that kind of talent. So that was really interesting to me. I think another side note example of that is Flexport right now. Flexport is now one of the unicorns in San Francisco. They're addressing logistics, right? Freight forwarders, carriers. They are the hottest startup right now, and they're unsexy. Now that all these venture capitalists have seen that unsexy industry wasn't getting any love, wasn't getting attention. So that's just it continues to prove this hypothesis I've had around unsexy businesses will eventually become really sexy because making money is sexy at the end of the day. So I was looking at Casita as an investment opportunity and ended up not only investing, but spending a significant amount of my time there.
And when was this, Brian? Not to interrupt you, but just
So Casita founded probably June of 2015, and I joined on in like August of 2015. So probably 60 days after the idea was had by Jeff and Taylor Wilson. Jeff Wilson is a professor down here in Austin, and he lived in a dumpster for a year as a social experiment and realized that living in a small space, if well designed, it wasn't that bad. And 40-foot dumpster might not be for everybody, but maybe a 400-square-foot highly designed home could be. And so that was really the genesis of Casita. And so I, from afar, was an advisor investor. And through that year, we built this concept, this idea into a fully baked business plan, went on, raised a round of capital, and was asked to come step in as president and COO. And in that role, I've been really building the business, hiring and growing both the top line revenue standpoint to all of the human capital resources, capital equipment, because we are a CapEx heavy business, right? We are manufacturing homes, and we do it in a level of extreme precision and accuracy and quality. So how I got there, though, is a probably more interesting way to get us to that point. My background education is engineering and physics. I went to school at Michigan State. And during that time, I was a physics major, and I realized I didn't want to be a physicist. I realized once I looked down that road, I saw where that was leading. So I decided to go change majors into engineering, and I was able to, I did something at Michigan State called applied engineering, which allowed me to get a supply chain minor. So I was like, I want to do business. I didn't really know what that was, yeah, or what kind of business, but I knew I wanted to do that. Got a job at Textron, which is a conglomerate that owns Bell Helicopter, Cessna Jets, and a few other divisions. You know, they're a big defense contractor. So in that role, I had held a lot of different roles, everything from supply chain logistics to electrical engineering, for prototype aircraft for the Army, to actually turning wrenches and building helicopters. So I did a lot of different cool stuff. That led me into a consulting role where I ended up joining a consulting firm for the next couple of years, advising large companies on growth plans, cost out initiatives, etc. And then I moved into a more niche role of advising private equity firms and their operational strategies. Eventually got hired by one of them, Platinum Equity in LA. I joined their M&A operations group, where I conducted diligence and, you know, built operating plans for companies we'd acquire. When I was there, the last fund, we just raised about a $6 billion fund, you know, made a large kind of carve out acquisition. So we would acquire large portions of companies like Emerson or General Electric, et cetera. And then we would apply our operating methodology to create value. And that idea, that value add model, was something I saw was very beneficial, created a lot of economic value, and worked really well at a large scale. At a small scale, I was pretty interested in it as well. I was always curious about venture capital and, you know, the early round investing. And I developed a thesis of there's a lot of people with really good ideas, great product people, innovative people who either do not have the capabilities or do not have the interest to do all the other aspects of their business, right? So that's back office, that's the supply chain and manufacturing work that I'd done in the past. It's also the finance, accounting, you know, kind of everything other than their product. And that was a thesis I started investing in with, was helping these idea product people by giving them not only capital, but also advisory services with that capital about how do you run your business and how do I alleviate this non-value add, at least to them, and, you know, non-sexy work that they didn't want to do. They want to focus on a product, then I would help them run the back office. And so I did that a number of times over, and that's really what led me to Casita. That model showed that, proved out with a really strong IRR that there's a lot of great products out there, and these services are needed, in particular when they cost you a lot less money, because venture capital money is very expensive, and you don't want to use venture capital money on consultants or other, you know, non-revenue driving expenses. So that's my background and where I got to, and kind of the thesis that led me to Casita, which now has turned into, you know, what I think a really great business that we're now raising our second round of capital. We're actually days or weeks from closing that Series B round of funding for Casita, which is going to allow us to grow significantly, hire more people in Austin, grow our business. We love Texas. We think there's a lot of pros. There's a couple of cons we can talk about, but I think there's a lot of attractive things about being in Texas and Austin in particular.
That's great. Thank you, Brian. That was really helpful. When did you move to Austin, just to kind of ground you in this specific city?
Yeah.
When did you, was it through Casita driven or was it pre-Casita?
It was. So I was in LA at Platinum Equity, and we were raising the Series A round of funding in the summer of 2016. And in September, when we closed that, I moved to Austin. So I've been here for about a year and a half.
Got it. Great. So I think this is what I really like about your perspective, just putting you into context with some of the other people we've talked with, is you're kind of someone who actually moved here for this innovative play from a place that, I mean, LA is considered, you know, a pretty innovative, hip place. And so I think you're going to bring a really a good perspective to this question. When you think about Austin innovation, like innovation ecosystems, and kind of thinking about, you know, how does Austin fit into this continuum? You know, we kind of talk a little bit about this continuum from an innovation backwater through a global innovation leader. I mean, you know, not necessarily saying like where you think Austin falls, but just what would be your assessment if you had to diagnose the ecosystem as a whole? Like, where do you see us falling, and like what's most salient to you when you make that call?
Yeah. So Austin it's a very desirable city to live in, right? That's a huge pro to the pro con checklist. It attracts a lot of people, but it's still a small town. And my assessment is that Austin has not hit a critical mass yet that I think it needs to drive like really significant innovation. I think there's a few drivers behind that. I think the University of Texas, is a minimum a top 20 school. I don't know where it ranks exactly, right? But it's a great public university. Attracts a lot of talent. Doesn't appear that it retains a lot of talent. I think that because of the size, I think people just naturally move to the New York, Boston, LA, San Francisco areas. But I think we're seeing a shift. I think we're seeing a shift in that new tax plan. The rollout of the tax plan, I think, is going to, over the next 12 months, start to impact people's pocketbooks. And I think they're going to look at New York and California and say, I can live a lot better life in Texas, right? And so, and you have this interesting dynamic in that Austin is a blue dot in a very red state. It is also a, it's a much more expensive town than everything else around it. Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Austin is significantly higher cost of living. But I think you also are, in California, say you're paying the sunshine tax. In Austin, I think you are still paying a lifestyle tax, right? People want to be here. That's why the cost of living is more. I anticipate seeing a lot of movement here. I think the addition of Oracle's campus, I think that's a few thousand people are going to move to Austin because of that. And that building, they're, I think, just about moving people in the door, right? So that's a done deal. It's happening as we speak. You have a lot of rumors about Amazon, and I think there's a lot of things that Austin's really poised for that. It's really hard to argue why Austin shouldn't win that bid, but we'll see what happens. All those, to say that I just see a lot of people moving, which solves that critical mass problem. I think every day you get more and more smart people who are moving here for a multitude of reasons. And I think it's only going to really improve the culture, because it's still a good culture, right? There's nothing wrong with the culture. But I think it needs just more people with more diversity and, which will push more innovation, right? And it's a cycle that will come with it. But currently, I will say that it's tough to hire in Austin. I have to look at both sides, both blue collar and white collar roles. There's, because it's such a growing, booming economy, it's hard to hire people at the an hourly wage, kind of what I look at as our labor force, which builds a city. There's just too much competition for skilled trades and things like that. On the white collar side of things, it's hard to find what I would consider top tier people. There's very good people, but there's not people who are really pushing the envelope because they're still being attracted to what's happening in San Francisco and LA and New York and Boston.
Very interesting. If you take the flip side of the coin, you were kind of alluding to it a little bit, and maybe I might circle back and kind of push on that, what the biggest strengths and advantages are, but just kind of looking at the other side of the coin, if you were to think about, here are things that are holding us back, and I think what you just said was one interesting point where you're like, the talent pool, there's just a constraint in terms of there's so much demand, there's just not that much unemployment, there's not a lot of people looking for work. And then particularly, you were saying this, top-tier talent is particularly hard to find because they're gravitating towards these other innovative centers in the country. Anything else that jumps out where you're thinking, you point to and say, hey, I think that's, that's been a challenge for us, whether it's culture or financial capital or transportation infrastructure, stuff like that, some other people talk about?
Yeah, there's a couple there. One is, and I think it is a function of the city size, is the capital. I think capital drives innovation. And I know, as someone who's now had to raise two rounds of capital for a startup, I don't really talk to anybody in Austin. There's one or two firms. Even in all of Texas, there's three I might spend some time with, and you both funds have a thesis, and if you don't fit their thesis, then that's kind of going to take them off the list. So I spent all my time in the Bay Area and a little bit in New York. I think unfortunately we need to get the critical mass to get the venture funds here, which then will infuse capital, which then drives innovation, right? And it's this cycle. there is a little bit of the culture of the, there is a laissez-faire, kind of this hippie, keep awesome, weird culture, which is not a hard-driving, capitalist, competitive culture. And that is a little bit of an issue as well. I as a, executive leader of the company, the bottom line is the only thing I have to pay attention to in my company is, how quickly can I grow, drive top line revenue, and then can we become a profitable business? That sentiment is not always shared by everybody in the company. And I really appreciate the diversity and the challenge of thought. And I think that fosters a lot of value in the business. But if you can't get to that point to understand that a business has to operate, to make money first and foremost, that is an issue. And I've had employees who, if they were okay with giving away all the product because it was for the better good, but they realized, if you don't have an unlimited bank account, you can't do that, and thusly the business will fail. And so I think that is just, it's just part of the culture of Austin that does need a little bit of a, kick in the pants, it feels like sometimes. And I actually think going back to that whole, this waterfall effect, I think when you have more critical mass, it drives more capital infusion drives more competition, and more competition drives a work ethic and a culture that is going to kind of self-accelerate. I think it size of the city interplays with all those different things. But the good news is we're moving in the right trajectory, right? The trend line is moving up and to the right very quickly.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think a lot of people have used, they'll say it in slightly different ways, but this idea of a, activation energy would sort of be the chemical analogy. Like we have to hit this or critical point or whatever you want to call it, where you hit something and you start to catalyze this change. Yep. I think a lot of people have kind of referred to that. And it's interesting because you have to wonder, like, what is that going to be? Because it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg and a hen house situation with financial, capital, people, companies, and, you need all of them to kind of catalyze it. But it's interesting because I don't think anyone said the opposite of that. I think not everyone's competent on it.
But well, and I think another interesting thing that you're seeing is when you look at like venture capital as a whole, you have Steve Case and JD Vance who are doing this Rise of the Rest, right? It's a $200 million fund focused on non-coastal cities. They want to look at the middle of America because they think there's a lot of pent up energy and innovation there that just needs to be capitalized. And I really believe that. I think that San Francisco in particular, like if you look at the math, San Francisco accounts for somewhere in the neighborhood of 35% of all funding for startups, right? And the equal or greater amount of those startups are headquartered in the Bay Area. But the numbers are changing. And what it feels like to me is that San Francisco, if you're moving to San Francisco, you're chasing the puck. You don't ever want to be chasing the puck. You want to be where the puck's going to be. And I don't know if it's Austin or elsewhere. I think the puck might be getting divided, but I don't think it's San Francisco anymore, right? I think it is Austin. I think it's Denver. I think it's other cities that are just more business friendly, have just a more welcoming ecosphere. There's a lot of different attributes that particularly I think San Francisco is just scaring people away by the day.
One thing I wanted to talk about, just that work culture point, something we've talked to a number of people about. How much of that is just, how much of that would you attribute to Austin specifically? Like, do you think there's something, like if you were building this company in Los Angeles or New York City, I'm not sure you'd want to, but, or even San Francisco, and I think that would have been a really bad idea given what you guys are doing. But
now, our biggest customer demand is in LA and San Francisco, right? Because we build housing for high density populations. So actually those are our core targets. We want to be very close to those, but you don't want to be inside them because there's, just the cost doesn't work. But there's a lot of businesses who are in those cities because they want to be as close to their customers as possible. So, and we consider that a little bit. We chose Austin. One is because it actually was the originating point, right? It was born here. But we had we were a very small company with a lot of cash at one point, and we were able to make that decision. We chose Austin because it had that mix. It was a city that would attract talent. One of my first hires was my product manager, who I'd worked with at Bell Helicopter. And he was in DC working for the government, and had, had a great job and loved the city, had a lot of fun there. And I asked him, when I asked him to move here, he said, very specifically, he's like, well, we're staying in Austin, right? And I said, well, I mean, cost of facilities and labor in Houston is pretty desirable. He's like, I'm not moving to Houston. I'm moving to Austin, right? There, it wasn't Texas, it was Austin. And I think that is, that goes a long way. This is, there is a gravity to Austin that attracts people and makes, and they want to be here because there is a lifestyle, there is a culture, and that attracts people that even other cities locally to Austin just don't do.
Interesting. I think that speaks to that quality of life thing, yeah. Which pretty much everyone we've talked to have said. And I think that's a great, like, actual concrete example of it, because people kind of talk about it in this very holistic sense. But that's a really concrete example where if you said, yeah, actually, we're going to move to Houston, I don't know if you would have lost that person, but sounds like you may have.
Absolutely would have. Yeah. And he's, so it's funny because when I say, he works for the government, he was in the CIA, and we can say that he's now open. And
about his past.
Yeah. He's not undercover anymore. But right. He traveled the world, and he loved DC, but he loved traveling. And he said, well, look, there's not much of an international airport in Austin, but I know it's coming. And he actually made that decision as well. It's like, well, look, I'm kind of going where the puck's going to be. Austin's growing, and eventually it's going to give me everything I want. Right now I'm more than willing to take the outdoor living, the lakes, all that kind of stuff.
Right. What's been your experience just in the town, kind of the education ecosystem? You were talking about UT in these general terms about the fact that it's a top 20 university and it's a public university, and obviously there's a lot of scale. How much of an advantage has that been for you guys as you build the company, either recruiting directly from recent graduates or being able to have this UT pool? Has that been, to what extent has that been a benefit for you specifically at Casita?
We haven't seen it directly. We've had two employees who were actually professors at the University of Texas. They're experts in their field, and they were amazing. But we haven't hired very many people as students from UT. We had one intern, and we have one person who came out from an MBA program at UT, and she is great. But when I look at the number of resumes we have coming in the door, UT is not a strong presence. I don't have an explanation as to why that is, but I don't feel like I see the presence I see from Stanford in San Francisco, right? Like you have a lot of Stanford alum doing a lot of great things in SF, and that correlation seems very strong. I don't see that with UT in Austin nearly as much.
Where are you guys pulling from? Just out of curiosity to kind of put that puzzle together.
It's network effects more than anything. And I would say it's where all of us as executives and our networks are from. A lot of us have pretty wide distributed networks. So, and I don't see any of them. I don't see a ton of focus. We do look at the Bay Area quite a bit, particularly on our tech side of things. There is a decent software, developer network here. Mainly because of WP Engine and a little bit of Dell, but generally speaking, there's just so much talent, and you see it in the cost as well. Amazingly, you can get software talent, or at least it appears you can get software talent for less money in the Bay Area than you can in Austin, which is pretty interesting, right? There's very few roles in any industry where that holds true.
Interesting. It's just local supply and demand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Really interesting. Really interesting stuff. Other, I know you mentioned you were kind of referred to the tax environment, which is more to do with Texas than Austin. But obviously Austin does play a role in that. It was something you'd mentioned kind of at the beginning. I just was curious if you thought, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on that a little more holistically.
Yeah.
Being a company in Texas and from a regulatory standpoint too, like what the implications have been. Being here.
Yeah, now that's very interesting. Texas as a whole is a huge draw because of taxes. California or New York, all those states are, they're getting hit and they're getting hit harder because of the new tax plan. I see taxes at state level as being really desirable and help us quite a bit. Austin, there's no direct impact on us in terms of taxes from a company standpoint. We do see it in regulation, though. I think regulation is, there's a couple of good examples. Like, the biggest one is Uber, right? Not very often do you see the state have to come and step in. You know, the state of Texas basically said, Austin, you're drunk, go home. And they changed the law. They overrode the regulation that Austin put in. That is, I think it definitely shows the red and blue difference of the city and the state. Another good example, so my wife, we're a pretty entrepreneurial household. So my wife is starting a business right now. She has a mobile daycare system. It's called Studio Sitter. And what they do is they go to studios that can't affordably operate a childcare service in a CrossFit or a Spin Cycle or a Studio Cycle or, you know, the, what is this?
Soul Cycle.
That's right. Yeah. So one of those, right? They just don't have daycare, but a lot of people have children who would love to have some place to you know, get 1 hour of childcare service. So they have a mobile service where they have a truck and trailer and it's all decked out like a childcare facility, and they roll up and they provide their service. Now, when they started talking to the city of Austin about what they were going to do, they first talked to TDLR, which is Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, and said, you know, is there, you know, what regulation do we fall under? And the state of Texas said, well, we don't have one for what you do. You're not this, you're not that. So we don't really know what to do. Austin, same story. And it really rolled down to the Austin city level and said, well, the city of Austin requires that a childcare facility have a certificate of occupancy. It's a hard rule. And well, you only get a CO if you are a home. Well, you don't have a CO in a mobile trailer. And they basically just defaulted. They said, well, we don't have a rule in the book, so it's illegal, right? There's the default is it's a just a giant axe to innovation, because innovation by nature is going to create things that there are not rules and laws around. And when your default is to not open a conversation, say, how do we make this fit? Because this is a service that we all see value in, right? This is something that consumers want and will provide economic value to community. It was a very clear, no, we don't know how to handle it, so it's illegal, you can't do it. And so we've been kind of fighting that battle. And you have options, the way Uber approached it and said, well, you know, we're going to ask for forgiveness, not permission, because the, you know, the value that we're going to create and the zeitgeist that we're going to build is going to override any fines we get. And Uber's battle ended up being much longer and more painful than I think they anticipated. Both sides were just holding out and waiting, you know, it's going to see who, you know, let go of holding their breath first. I don't think it worked out the way either of them thought it was going to. I think they both thought the other one would break first. They didn't think the state was going to come in and you know, break up the battle. So anyway, all of that to say that I think Austin is a little bit more representative of the left-leaning thought around regulation than I think, you know, you typically see on the right side. So regulation can be a battle, depends on what you do, but it is a real thing and I've seen it in action.
Very interesting. Want to tie that off with one question just to kind of, we've been talking about so many different things. You know, if you were kind of king for a day, or you, let's not limit you to a day, but let's get to say you get to be the king of Austin, and you've been tasked with saying, hey, we really want to build this Austin innovation ecosystem so you can sort of change some things. You could bring capital in, you could bring talent. If you were to say, hey, here's the three things that I would want to do, because I think it's going to make the biggest difference, what would those be?
Oh, that's a good question. I would certainly try to be as business friendly as possible, right? Try to bring in businesses that are going to employ, drive, you know, create jobs, etc. And you know, this, I'm certainly not a Trump supporter, but I do think that is one place that he actually does create value, right? If you can disagree with 98% of the things he does, but I think, you know, job creation is a really important function. So, and you know, and I've heard this story as well. I don't know if you ever heard this, the Dell story, right? Why they're in Round Rock. And Michael Dell said, well, look, I love Austin. I want to be in Austin, but Round Rock is offering more tax abatement. You know, tax abatement doesn't cost you money. It just lowers the amount of money that you're going to take in of future gains, right? But it's very easy to say, like, well, if you know, would you rather have 80% of something or 0% of nothing? Or swap that, you know what I mean. And they ended up, City of Austin said, no, we're going to hold and we're not going to give you the tax abatement. So they got, you know, 20% of nothing. And now Dell is a gigantic company in Round Rock. So I think that's another real tangible example of you know, keeping a more friendly stance, you know, can have really dramatic impact. So that as well as I would want to keep a lot of the culture, right? There's just a lot of fun things that happen in Austin that attracts people. I think the city has done a really good job at, you know, attracting the South by Southwest, the ACL, and you know, really not only fostering and attracting it, but actually, you know, kind of creating it. Right, these are really organic things that have happened in Austin. Formula One, drives a lot of traffic and a lot of you know really cool things here. So, I like that. I'll continue to try to keep that culture and you know just keep the accelerator going there.
So last topic we wanted to talk to you about was just sort of these cultural characteristics. It's kind of a different way of thinking about it, and we had kind of a list that we were talking with before. Was just sort of curious, you know, when you look over kind of these cultural touchstones that tend to define, you know, different cultures. Is there anything there where you're saying, you know what, here's something I've seen a lot of that I think is really helpful to the city, and then obviously the converse of that, where you're saying, hey, we've got this or we lack this, and it's really a problem.
You know, I don't know if I see anything that really stands out to me specifically. Mm-hmm. No, but what I do see is it goes back to that whole critical mass thing that we were talking about, right? You know, can you get to a point of, you know, of catalyst? And I think all of those are represented in the culture and the workforce and everything in Austin. You just doesn't feel like you have quite enough of it yet. And there's a lot of compounding functions that will make those much more apparent, I think, with increased size. So, yeah, I don't have anything on your list that hits me right off the bat.
Got it. Brian, I really appreciate you taking the time. You guys are doing some really cool stuff, and I know you personally have been doing even more than that in terms of your career. So, really appreciate you like taking the time to sit down with us and give us your perspective on Austin's innovation ecosystem.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.